All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse from Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado Tony Penico.
And Psychic Tom Daniel with his crystal ball shined up and ready to go.
Nice.
All right, and talk about predictions coming true. Just discussing it before we jumped on air here. But Floyd Mayweather versus CM Punk. I've been joking about it at first, but then started talking seriously about it the last few weeks, to the point where I was actually started writing an article about it. So I get in my email updates today from a website called punditarena.com, an article that says Floyd Mayweather pegged as big underdog in hypothetical MMA matchup with CM Punk. So, the worst part is, in the middle of the article, they say that now, in a recent development that could be even more off-putting than the first, the rumor mill has been rampant with talks of Floyd making his MMA debut against former WWE superstar CM Punk, a rumor Team Mayweather themselves started. I don't know, maybe Floyd listens to our show. Maybe that's where he got the idea.
Well, I mean, there are worse things he could do than listen to our show.
Right. Or I could always say, great minds think alike, right?
That's it.
Smart business. That's funny. So, you know, obviously they haven't announced a next opponent for CM Punk, so something like this could just kind of be a stir the pot and see what happens. But I think it's interesting that Floyd is on the same wavelength if he really did start this rumor, supposedly. I didn't really hear it because I started it. That's too funny. I mean, I honestly totally thought of it as a joke, but like I started thinking of a couple of weeks at a time, you know, off in the back of my head, you know, would that be possible? Could Floyd actually have a chance to win? And CM Punk does have a head start, but Floyd has a head start on the feet, so I mean, it's an interesting question for sure. But, you know, the other question is Floyd ready to really give up a lot of his dominant boxing style for some of the other stuff? But he did text a picture of himself elbowing Conor McGregor, and some language that is not suitable for young viewers, listeners, was used. But yeah, it's starting to look more and more like he wants it to happen, you know, or at least wants to joke about it happening. But something tells me there's some hint of seriousness about all this, and he is looking for a way in. And that would be really funny to me if he did get the idea from us.
Well, Rich, since you envisioned this, and if you're going to be the odds maker, what are your opening odds on this?
Well, it really depends on what Floyd does for training. You know, if they announce this as CM Punk's next fight, Floyd loses. If he does a six-month training camp and does this, you know, sometime in September of next year, I mean this year, I still got time, or just even December would be good, then I don't know, I would say Floyd has a chance to do well. And you know, he already can elbow, right?
Punk has shown nothing.
He's already elbowed a lot of people in boxing matches, right? Semi on purpose.
Hey, and not only Cody's, you know,
what happened? All right, so does Floyd have a chance? I think you were going to say something about that, Tony.
Well, as we're seeing, you know, Floyd has had, you know, his own infractions in the boxing world, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what he carries over into the MMA world. I mean, obviously he's out of his element, but he's not taking on a guy that has a lot of experience. It's not like he's taking on Conor McGregor, who was considered one of the best in the world in MMA. He's taken on CM Punk, who's 0-1, limited experience.
Go ahead. Finish that talk. Tony.
No, I was just saying, if there was a winnable fight for Mayweather, it would be this one, because Punk hadn't fought in a while. He's only had one fight. He lost. Didn't last very long when he did. So it's not like he's taking on a guy that's considered one of the best in the world, like Conor McGregor, in an MMA fight. He's taking on a basically relatively unproven fighter who's just pretty much as much of a novice as he would be. I mean, Punk probably has more training, but what's he been doing the last year or two? Nobody's heard from him. So has he been out there secretly improving on his game, or has he been, trying to get back into the wrestling world? Nobody knows. So, I mean, this could be one where Mayweather could, be able to get in there and, make a true effort at it, a real true run.
Yeah, I really think that if he committed to the training, he really needs only takedown defense against a guy like CM Punk, because that would be CM Punk's only advantage, is the wrestling and grappling aspect.
Yeah.
So if you take that away from CM Punk as an advantage by just drilling takedown defense all the time, it's an even game again. Or it's Floyd's game, because it's on the feet. But you never know what he can do with knees and elbows either. He might not even need the boxing as much. So we'll see. But I really think that there's something about when Floyd was so pissed off at Conor McGregor during the press conferences for that fight in the boxing ring, that there was something about those statements that, I'm gonna fight you in the cage next. There was something that told me he is not joking. He really seriously thinks he can do that and would do that if the money was right. And the other aspect is, how long is Conor going to stay out of the UFC to get what he wants? Because the latest now is he wants part ownership of the whole thing.
That's kind of a big request.
Yeah. Especially after they're still trying to prove they're worth $4.2
billion. Yeah.
So, now he wants his cut. But, very interesting stuff. But, the odds, according to this article, are in CM Punk's favor. Because he would just take him down.
Because remember, this would be Mayweather out of his element, so. But we're assuming that this is Punk's element. I mean, he really hasn't shown us more than
0-1 with about 2 minutes in the octagon. I don't know if we can say he's a full-blown MMA fighter. So I think Floyd's a live body in this fight.
Yeah. From joke to reality. Could actually happen. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it is true that the UFC has actually been talking about that themselves, and they want to set Punk up with one setup fight first. Because I think I mentioned to Tom already that 1-1 is a lot better than 0-1, going even against an 0-0 guy.
But I mean, even a setup. I mean, he so far has shown no ability to perform. The only downside, I'd like to see someone, a boxer with a little more pop, but then again, how do we know if Punk can take a punch?
That's right.
Because you know darn well that... Right, and especially if those punches are coming in at 95 miles an hour, I mean, anyone can be stunned by them. I mean, Floyd may not have that one-punch knockout power against professional boxers, but against people that aren't professional boxers. I wouldn't want to get 10 or 20 punches real quick from him.
No. And I believe he actually feels he would be more dangerous with those smaller gloves on.
Yeah,
And they've had some very, very major clashes over gloves in his previous fights. You know, weight of the gloves, type of gloves, all that stuff. So it'd be interesting if he ever does it. As if he ever fights McGregor, I'm sure the astronomical odds are out there. But who knows? Could be possible.
Well, a lot of people said we'll never see McGregor fight Mayweather in a boxing ring. A lot of people were wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that might be as unlikely, an effort to unionize MMA. And this is on the UFC roster only on this one, and it's being started by bantamweight Leslie Smith, who's been in the news about this before. It's called Project Spearhead, and the website went live on Friday, and as of now, Leslie is serving as the Project Spearhead interim president, while UFC lightweight Cajun Johnson has been named the interim vice president, and labor lawyer Lucas Middlebrook, who is an attorney who helped Nick Diaz in his 2015 marijuana case, is also part of this project. And their hope is basically to unionize UFC fighters. 30% of the UFC roster, according to this article, would need to sign confidential authorization cards that are valid for 1 year. If that happens, the National Labor Relations Board will determine whether UFC fighters shall be considered employees or independent contractors. Then if the NLRB classifies UFC fighters as employees, Project Spearhead will host an election, and 50% of the fighters plus one must vote in favor of Project Spearhead. If that happens, Project Spearhead will then begin work toward a collective bargaining agreement with the Endeavor-owned promotion. So, if they do get classified as independent contractors, a regular union cannot be formed. And then if that happens, fighters can, quote, continue our voluntary association to focus on bettering our profession, unquote. So, as we know, there's been some other efforts. The MMAAA, not Alcoholics Anonymous, but MMA Athletes Association. And Professional Fighters Association also both attempted to form a fighters union in recent years, but really nothing has been done by either one, except setting up websites and, you know, acting like they're giving a damn. But really hasn't been much in updates of those two. Here's a good remark on the same topic, and also a nice transition point, because he's fighting tomorrow night, or Saturday night, I think, is the Bellator this week. But Matt Mitrione has been given some outspoken remarks in the past, but it's funny, he has the nickname of Meathead, because, you know, the same guy on the All in the Family Archie Bunker show, Meathead, was very opinionated. But, he says, direct quote here, freedom and obviously the sponsorship dollars, so I'm happy. I mean, I can always be happy with sponsorship, but I am happy. It's good business. It's just nice. The UFC cannot get out of its own way. I think it's pretty evident in what they do, their consistent missteps, how they handle their guys, the media, like not giving the show money to the cat that made weight, stuff like that. Little tiny things that are just another notch against. I feel like they are not in a colossal nosedive, but I do not think they are in the right spot. I feel like what Mr. Coker does very casually is what he needs to do to bring fans' eyes over to Bellator, and I think the production is completely different over at Bellator. It's a spectacle. He took a page out of old Japanese MMA and made it bananas. So, to some extent, he's saying, you know, it's better over here, but it's a freak show. And he likes the freak show. So, he's part of a Grand Prix heavyweight tournament that's going to crown a champion at the end of it. And Roy Nelson, another UFC former UFC fighter will be his opponent Friday. Actually, yeah, it is tomorrow, February 16th. Bellator 194. From Connecticut, too, I believe. Connecticut. Chuck Liddell, not letting comebacks to MMA die. He's starting his own rumor that Floyd Mayweather is his next opponent. No. Chuck Liddell versus Floyd Mayweather. Yeah, right. You guys still with me?
Yes, I'm still with
you. Just checking. You didn't react at all to that. I figured you'd be like, what? It's been talked about for a while, but the Iceman is serious about returning to fighting. He was recently a cast member on Celebrity Big Brother, although not for long. He's the first guy voted off the show. So I guess he had too much testosterone for that group. But he talked to TMZ Sports recently about his time in the house and why he was training in there, saying that he wanted to stay in shape because it was a possible return to MMA. He said, it's still a possibility for sure, so I didn't want to get too far out of shape. I was in there boxing the whole time. There's a lot of stuff that they didn't show, but I was...
Well, and he'll be 49 this year, so I guess age is not exactly on his side.
Hey, well, he hasn't tested positive for anything recently, so maybe Roy Jones Jr. could be his next opponent instead of Jason Anderson Silva.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, he's got a lot to think about. I was watching another one of those Jerry Quarry documentaries last night about Jerry's last days. And,
yeah, bad news.
Chilling.
Yeah. I've seen some of that.
How hard was that to watch?
Yeah, it was. I mean, he couldn't even get his shoes on. I mean, it was just beyond words. And Chuck's, you know, he's kind of a candidate for a little neurological damage. So, see what happens. You just wonder, apparently his transition after fighting has not been going too smooth.
And that was, like I said, and some of the knockouts that he took were just completely devastating, you know. And it was funny you mentioned Roy Jones, because Roy supposedly and hopefully had his last fight, you know, just a few days ago, won the unanimous decision, scoring a knockdown as well. But, you know, Roy, who we had on the show about 5 or so years ago, you know, took some pretty brutal knockouts, starting with the Antonio Tarver knockout, and he, you know, was still sharp as a tack. You know, he was on the show with us, clear, cognizant, great memory. He does a great job on, you know, the HBO broadcast, and it's like you hope that one day, almost like Floyd Patterson, like, was great, 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 and then one day was like, couldn't remember anything about his boxing career, and suffered greatly over, you know, the last few years of his life, which unfortunately you see a lot. So hopefully that doesn't happen to Roy Jones, and hopefully, you know, you'll see that with Chuck Liddell as well, because, I mean, he took some absolutely punishing knockouts. Scary ones.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, going back to the Tarver fight, and for Roy, it was a lot of it was downhill after that.
Yeah,
and yet maybe that I still insist there's a huge genetic component there, because some guys just can maintain their neurological capacity. But you're right, though. You never know. I mean, you are rolling the dice. I mean, every fighter that gets in there is rolling the dice. And good, very good analogy about Floyd. And then all of a sudden, boom. The lights were on. No one was home.
Yeah.
Well, here's a story you might guys might appreciate here. Omar Figueroa Jr. is supposed to be facing Adrian Broner, right?
Yeah.
So you hear that and you're thinking, what did Adrian Broner do now, right?
Right.
Well, no. It's time. Actually, no, it is. Omar Figueroa Jr. faces DUI charge ahead of fight with Adrian Broner.
Wow.
But at the same time, I spoke too soon because Adrian Broner is also facing a misdemeanor charge for sexual battery stemming from a Monday incident at an Atlanta shopping mall.
What is there to say?
Both of them are in trouble.
Oh, man. Well, now I would assume that the fight is still on. I mean, a DUI should not stop Omar.
Right.
It's a misdemeanor for Broner, not a felony.
Right.
Also, I guess we'll still see the fight.
March 26th is the next court date for Figueroa.
Rich, what is the date? What's the tentative date for that?
It's looking like April 21st.
April 21st. That means we got the whole month of March. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds of April, and almost a half a month of February. Oh, boy. Over 2 months yet.
Unreal stuff, huh? Interesting article.
I'm surprised about Omar. Boy, I never heard much about him in extracurricular activities outside of the ring. I mean, Broner, if anyone's surprised about that, this discussion's over with.
Broner made him do it.
Yeah.
Interesting article in Bloomberg.com today for a couple of reasons. Article is called "Instead of Killing Boxing, the UFC Plans to Use It as a Lifeline." And Tom can tell you, I went on a little bit of a rant myself the other night on this topic, that the UFC is lacking in a lot of ways the oomph they used to have. So basically, this cancellation of cards, a lot of the moves they've made with Conor to the point that he's not coming back unless he gets the perfect opportunity, tons of money. They've really painted themselves in a corner in a lot of ways. And it's going to bite them. And the other thing is that once the real shit hits the fan with these UFC fighters, like the antitrust suit, I believe, is just the beginning. You're going to have some type of concussion, personal injury lawsuit that is going to hit at some point. And it's going to be worse than the NFL concussion lawsuit as far as the impact on the organization. Because the NFL is so big that it could pay that. It could absorb that, but I think the UFC will not be able to absorb something like that if it ever happens. And the thing I was pointing out to Tom is that it's not just that the UFC is at a different level and the fighters are better there, so there's more risk. It's the fact that the UFC has been saying for decades now, you need to go out there and put on a show to keep your job, to get advancements, to win the title. You need to put on a show. So how many more guys because of that have pushed it to the limit, dropped their hands, gone toe-to-toe when they should have fought a smart fight? How many risks did fighters take that caused them injury? There could be an argument made there for a massive legal case because of that attitude.
Or taking fights on short notice, taking fights when they're hurt,
right,
who wants to
or
cancel.
You're fired, if you don't. That's happened a few times. People have been given that ultimatum. But this article points to a talent exodus and ratings decline as the reason why they're turning to boxing. It's a lot of facts and figures. The best line of all in the article, though, is Thomas Hauser, author of Muhammad Ali, His Life and Times, and one of boxing's elder statesmen, says, WME buying the UFC for $4.2 billion is starting to look like Time Warner's decision to merge with AOL. And then it gets worse. Kurt Emhoff, a sports attorney at Kazowitz Benson Torres LLP, is more blunt. The worst case scenario is that they just bought MySpace.
Oh, MySpace. Yeah. Great.
You know, and also, Rich, another thing with this is you have to consider the Reebok influence.
Yes.
You know, it seems like when corporations get a hold of something, that rawness is gone. Everyone's just so, you know, with the exception of the Diaz brothers or a few other characters. But I'm telling you guys, in the old days, everyone had a personality back then. In the early days of the UFC, when the big money wasn't there, I mean, I'm glad guys are making more, but there are just so many problems now. And guys are worried about what they say all the time. Well, if you want to draw people, you need personalities.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole allure of Muhammad Ali back in the Cassius Clay days. I mean, back then, no one was on him about his religion or his political views. It was just he had a big mouth. No one liked it. I mean, that was pro wrestling stuff. That wasn't boxing. And
right.
Here this guy, Cassius Clay, saying, more will fall in four, ain't no jive, Cooper in five, and all this stuff. And people, he had that personality. Love him or hate him, you want to see him, for sure. And we've just lost a lot of that in the UFC now. And I'm just wondering just what this corporate influence has done, if it's really put a muzzle on people.
All right, my computer is going to start to try to restart here for a second, so hang on a second. Let me stop and save this just in case it does. Let's see what happens. Oh, it's not going to let me stop it anyway, because it's saving the other file, so I guess we got some time. Oh, if it ain't one thing, it's another. We'll edit out these parts later. But anyway. So we got the UFC basically getting to that point where it just doesn't seem like there's as much interest as it used to be. I think I mentioned that it's no longer the fastest growing sport in the world, for sure. Mixed martial arts in general is not. And you see a company like Bellator maybe put on more freak show fights, but they're also expanding. They have kickboxing. So they've done shows in different countries with the kickboxing attached to the MMA cards. And I think they've had some success with that. So, you know, maybe the UFC is starting to realize that they have to make that crossover too and get something out of boxing. And we've had a couple UFC fighters say they want to box too. Jose Aldo, not to name one. I believe Jimmy Manua had said he wanted to box. Stipe mentioned wanting to fight Anthony Joshua. And Cyborg, of course, on the women's side. Even though that's going to be tougher to sell. But it's all a possibility. We got some UFC fights to talk about from last week. Luke Rockhold versus Yoel Romero was the big fight last weekend.
A disappointment for Luke. He really needs a boxing coach. You know, if there's one downside to his stand-up, I mean, his liver kick is so powerful. His ground and pound is nasty. Awful strong, but he just is a bit robotic. And I'm kind of wondering at this point if he can change.
Right.
I mean, there's so much movement with him, that pulling straight back. Ugly, ugly fight for him.
Yo Romero, though, you know, we kind of thought he was a one-trick pony, and he showed that he could definitely throw some punches and strikes. He definitely looked good in there. It wasn't a fluke win, for sure. Was a lot of people talking more about the post-fight situation than the pre-fight. Immediately after knocking out Luke Rockhold, as he was standing up, Yoel Romero was kissing him on the cheek.
And he didn't.
Yeah. bad.
The question is like, where am I? Get this guy off of me.
13-2 is Yul's record. And it took 1 minute and 48 seconds into the third round to get the job done. But Luke had a decent strategy. You know, they were trading a lot of leg kicks. And, you know, it seemed like a back-and-forth fight. And then Yul just caught him. Caught him sleeping, basically. A lot of punches. And 40 years old is Yul Romero. So, hey, looks good for 40. And he is named nicknamed the Soldier of God, so that's probably why he was so affectionate towards his opponent. You know, he's not intending to hurt anybody, even though he's in the hurt business.
So that was kind of yeah, that kiss was just classic, absolute classic.
At least he didn't do it before the fight, like that one guy in that clip that gets knocked out for it, and that was right on the lips, that one. Curtis Blaydes also got a big win over Mark Hunt, unanimous decision. He just basically had the better game plan in that one. Stayed away from the Mark Hunt haymaker most of the fight. There was one brief moment where Mark might have been able to pull off the win, but Blaydes had a better gas tank.
Hunt started off good in that first round, but... I mean, Blaydes did what he had to do. I think he fought very smart. Boy, he caught hell online about that. Being boring, but I mean, hey, you don't want to stand and trade with Mark Hunt.
Right. Exactly. So, we had that one. We had Tai Tuivasa beating Cyril Asker by a vicious TKO, punches and elbows, 2 minutes and 18 seconds into that first round there. Jake Matthews beating Jiang Liang Li by unanimous decision. Tyson Pedro beating Saparbek Safarov by Kimura submission in the very first round, 3 minutes and 54 seconds into that one. Dong Hyun Kim beating Damian Brown by split decision. Israel Adesanya beating Rob Wilkinson by TKO from knees and punches. Alexander Volkanovski beat Jeremy Kennedy by TKO from punches. 4 minutes and 7 seconds into the second round. And then we had Jussie da Silva beating Ben Nguyen by technical submission from the rear naked choke. 1 minute and 43 seconds into the third. Ross Pearson got a big win over Mizuto Hirota. Unanimous decision win there. Jose Alberto Quinones also got a big win over Teruto Ishihara by unanimous decision. And first fight of the night, Luke Jumo took all the unanimous decision win against Daichi Abe. Then we have a big UFC card. So this weekend, and a Bellator card to talk about. UFC Fight Night 126 coming up. I guess that one's Saturday. No, Sunday. And Nelson versus Mitrione is Friday. So let's talk about Nelson versus Mitrione. We already mentioned the main event, Mitrione Nelson. I actually like Nelson to win that one. I know Mitrione hits hard. I think he is the taller, lankier fighter with more reach, but something about Roy's boxing, I think, is on a higher level than Matt's. And if he fights the kind of fight he needs to fight, I think Roy can win it. And especially if he gets him in that crucifix move that he used so well on the Ultimate Fighter. On the ground.
Well, and you also have to realize, too, Roy has the power edge. That one of those right hands lands, and that could be it.
The experience and youth and talent factor, Matt Mitrione might have somewhat of an edge in certain areas, but he's just... He had so few fights. I mean, he's 12-5 compared to 23-14. Of course, Roy has lost more, but you know, Matt is, I don't know, he's just, he kind of got lucky against Fedor, I think, for one. And for two, he hasn't even been in Bellator that long. And he hasn't been able to have a lot of fights in Bellator. So, I like Roy, but, you know, Matt could win. He could definitely win this one. Could go either way. I'm looking forward to seeing this one. Also on the card, Patricky Freire, another of the one of the Pitbull brothers, 18-8. He is fighting Derek Campos, who is 19-6. Liam McGeary also on the card. He has 12 wins to go with just two losses, fighting Vadim Nemkov, who is 8-2. And the big one, Tony's cousin, Anna the Hurricane Juliton. She's 2-3 as a female MMA fighter. Came over from boxing. And Heather Hardy, a former guest of ours, who is 1-1 in MMA, and her last fight was that one loss, and it was brutal. Brutal. Hard to watch, brutal. She got hit so many times in the nose, it looked like a baseball bat had been brought to her face. it was bad stuff. So against a fellow former boxer, I think it might be a little bit more interesting for her and maybe more tactical than it was against the kickboxer that she faced the last time out. She ended up getting kicked a lot. So we'll see how that works out, but that should be a good part of the fight card. Also, Taiwan Claxton was on the card. 1-0, fighting Jose Antonio Perez, who's 0-1. We got Marcus Surin, 4-1, fighting Dean Hancock, who's 3-1. Nick Giuletti, 0-0, fighting Andre Fiallo, 9-1. I guess that could be our mismatch of the week in MMA. And we even got a Jesus fight of the week on this card. We got Vinicius de Jesus. You got to say it like that when it's a day, I think. You got to say Jesus.
Okay, hold on. I got to take my notes now. Okay, so we got our mismatch of the week. We need our somebody O's got to go. We need our Jesus fight, and we need our horrifying record. So we got one down, three to go.
Here's an interesting name, though. Vinicius de Jesus. He's 5-2. He's fighting a guy named Jesse McElegant. Now we've had a former guest, McElegant. There is a boxing historian and expert. I wonder if he's related. He does come from a boxing family who was very close with Reuben the Hurricane Carter, actually. So it is possible this Jesse McElegant could be a boxer going over to MMA, too. I'll have to research that. Patrick McElegant, I believe, was the guy that we had on our show a few times. Of the day, but let me check where his record is. 5-3, Connors MMA from Mansfield, Massachusetts. I don't think he was from Massachusetts. But he could be related. I'll have to find out. Anyway, fight night 126. Big one coming up on Sunday from Austin, Texas. We got, of course, in Texas, you got to have a cowboy. So Donald Cowboy Cerrone in the main event, 32-10. Fighting Yancy Medeiros, who's 15-4. We got
that's going to be interesting. Do you think this is Cowboy's last chance saloon? I mean, he's lost three in a row now. What do you think?
Well, as long as you're a big enough name to headline a fight, I don't think win or lose, you're going out anytime soon. I mean, he does have such a big name. That, and he's always willing to fight too. That's another thing that you know makes him a company.
Yeah, but this is going to be a tough one for him. Going to be a real tough one. His last chance saloon. I don't think it is, but I would agree with you. He'll still be around, but four losses in a row now.
We'll see. I think he might be ready for this one. He has looked better than ever, you know, in recent history, and then dropped off. So you never know which Cowboy's going to show up. Then we got Derek Lewis versus Marcin Tybura. Derek comes in at 18-5, Tybura 16-3. James Vick coming in at 12-1, fighting Francisco Trinaldo, who's 22-5. Tiago Alves, 22-11, fighting Curtis Millender, who is 3. And we got Sage back in action. Sage Northcutt, 9-2, fighting Thibault Gauthier, who's 12-3. Jared Gordon, also on the card, 14-1, fighting Carlos Diego Ferreira, who's 12-2. Jeff Neal, 8-2, fighting Brian Camozzi, who's 7-4. Joby Sanchez, 11-2, fighting Roberto Sanchez, who's 7-1 in a brother versus brother fight.
Hey, we got a whole new category. Okay. So we got to get some rules on that. We got to have 3 of them before that becomes an official category.
I don't think they're actually related, but they're spelled the same, which is funny. Sarah Morris from the Female Ultimate Fighter season. She is on the card, 5-2, fighting Lucy Pudilova, who is 7-2. Brandon Davis, 8-3, fights Steve Peterson, who is 16-6. And here's a guy with some history. Joshua Berkman, 28-16, fighting Alex Morono, who is 13-4. The second fight of the night. And then you got two guys that should be on the main card by the judging of the records. See, Oscar Pichota, he is 10-0-1, fighting Tim Williams, who is 15-3. What we got for boxing coming up this weekend. BoxRecio.com. Oh, let's see. Well, last weekend, of course, wasn't a whole lot going on, but we had Jamie Munguia beating Jose Carlos Paz. Boxrec just puts the W and the names on the front page now. The actual result. But Miguel Berchelt beat Maxwell Awuku. Let's see what else is big on that one. Not really a big last Saturday. Big one this weekend, George Groves versus Chris Eubank Jr. And Danny Garcia versus Brandon Rios.
Lots of trash talk in that one. Yeah, a lot of trash. I hear the podcast as a fighter. I like him as a person. Very exciting. Brought us a lot of fights over the years, but he's at least 2 win classes above his best fighting weight. And he's been in a lot of wars. I mean, he has looked good. I mean, I'm anxious to see what Garcia, is going to do coming off that loss last year to Keith Thurman. But I think Rios is a bit shop-worn. So I think this is the first fight for Garcia, trying him in line for maybe a final or, a figure upset, maybe Adrian Broner, maybe a rematch with Keith Thurman, a fighter with Errol Spence, even Sean Porter. There's so many good fighters in that weight class that they just want to keep his name out there, hopefully have an impressive outing, and that way it's like, hey, I'm still here, and, get a marquee fight out of that.
Yeah, I would agree, Andre, and Rios is trying to say he's rejuvenated, and he's turned over a new leaf and all that, but I remember something, Tony, you said a couple of years ago about one of your predictions on one of his fights. You says, Brandon Rios will come forward and do what Brandon Rios does. I've always thought about that with him. He's pretty predictable, and I would agree he's going to have a very, very tough road to call.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And Danny comes in at 33-1 against a 34-3-1 Rios. It's at welterweight. And co-main events is interesting, too. We've got Ronald Gavril, 18-2, fighting David Benavidez, who's 19-0. And that one is for the WBC World Super Middleweight title. And the new Ray Robinson. also on the card at welterweight. He is
24-2. I've got to cover him a few times.
Fighting Yordinis Ugas, who is 20-3. So that ought to be a decent one. And another former guest of ours, I believe, Edwin Rodriguez, 29-2, with light heavyweight, fighting Lionel Thompson, who is 19-4. Edwin was on the show back in the Blog Talk Radio days, I believe. And, Edwin Rodriguez. Back in the day. It was a great conversation we had with him, too. He's a very smart guy. Plays chess in addition to being a boxer. But, I think actually we told him about chess boxing. He had no idea that sport existed. Where you actually do combine the two sports. But yeah, he had his first win, or his first loss was back in 2013 against Andre Ward, of all people. And he did get a second loss in 2016 against Thomas Williams Jr. One should be interesting. So that's happening Saturday. As well, on Saturday we have the Errol Spence card there. If I can find it, George Groves. There it is. George Groves versus Chris Eubank Jr. We get the juniors mixed up now. Super middleweight. George comes in 27-3. Chris comes in 26-1. That's for the IBO World Super Middleweight title and the WBA Super World Super Middleweight title. Tough one. Also on the card, Ryan Walsh, 22-2-1 as a featherweight, fighting Isaac Lowe, who's 14-0-2. Good stuff.
Groves says he's going to destroy him. Said he's going to jump on him. Quick and destroy him.
Good luck with that.
It would be interesting if he did. I don't see it happening, but.
And we didn't mention it, but Hank Lundy had a good performance the other night.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it. I didn't get to go down there in previous engagement that night. But you know. Corley is a shop-worn fighter, you know, well past his prime. But Hank did what Hank had to do. You know, he controlled the action. He won every round. He scored a knockdown. He didn't get the stoppage. But, you know, Corley is a wily veteran. So, you know, you did what you had to do.
And also something we've been forgetting to mention the last couple of weeks. Ronda Rousey and the WWE.
Yeah.
Totally blew that
off. Bottom.
That episode that would happen the week it happened. I started off the show saying something about Rowdy, and we never got to it. But in case anybody's been living under a rock, you might not know that Ronda Rousey joined the WWE officially. She is... yet to actually have a match, but I believe that the contract isn't officially signed, that's why. But she did make an appearance, she went into the ring, she pointed at the WrestleMania sign, and she was actually wearing the leather jacket of Roddy Piper, given to
her. Piper's jacket, which I thought was pretty awesome. You know, she had the sign with his type of, logo on it, so that was pretty cool, too.
And she's been given the blessing to use that nickname in WWE, so it's going to get interesting, and we'll see what happens there. But I thought it was very cool today when I read the article about the UFC needing boxing and mentioning that these WWE fighters have gone from UFC to WWE, and they mentioned Ronda Rousey before they mentioned Brock Lesnar, and then they mentioned Brock Lesnar and his test positive the both times he fought, and then it says, and then Brock Lesnar joined Rousey in the WWE. like, Rousey is the veteran, so you can tell the writer has no experience in sports writing, you know, writing for Bloomberg. But yeah, he joined Rousey in the WWE. So she's already a veteran. Good stuff. And then, you know, she did make one other appearance, but still. I think Ronda joined Brock, more like it. Anyway, you guys got anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
There isn't, you know, much on the radar, you know, this weekend in the boxing, except for the Danny Garcia fight. But, you know, we're looking, you know, for a potentially exciting spring, you know, some, you know, big fights on the horizon. So it's kind of the calm before the storm in the boxing world.
Could be, yeah. Could very well be. And stay tuned on the Mayweather thing. I really don't have hunches a lot, but you know, obviously my CM Punk versus Floyd Mayweather theory was a good one.
maybe this luminescence, this illumination of my crystal ball is wearing off on you. Maybe.
I'm learning from the teacher, professor. All right, guys. Well, have a great week, and Tony, enjoy your lobster tails and bisque and chowder. But every time...
Thank you, sir. I'm going to have it tomorrow night. You know, I put the picture on Facebook. Everybody wants an invite over, and they're all getting denied.
There's only so much, right?
My sarcasm the last few days has been off the charts.
Yeah, the problem is, you know, you get lobster, you tell everybody you're having lobster, and then you end up having to go buy more to feed everybody, right? Have a party.
I mean, I'll be generous. I'll share photos of me eating it.
There you go. And every time you mention lobster or chowder, you have to have an AH at the end of it if you do a video, right? Chowder and lobster.
Chowder. Lobster.
All right. That's the New England rule. That's the only catch.
Hey, sounds good to me.
All right.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a rematch next year.
Yeah. Well, I'd say hope it goes the other way, but I don't know. It's going to be a tough year next year. I really think, though, that you guys beating New England will, at the very least for us, motivate Brady to stick it out until he gets to another Super Bowl.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, when you're that elite of a competitor, and, you know, I don't care what people say about the man. You know, people can say, oh, he's a pretty boy, or, oh, he's had scandals, you know, whatever. That's all, you know, a bunch of BS, to be honest. First of all, you know, you play in the NFL, you're tough. You know, that's the bottom line right there. Especially a position where, you know, they're gunning for you. They are gunning for you, you know. So you're going to take them hits, and sometimes you got to get back up when you're beat up and you're bruised and you're banged around. And the thing is, you don't see that much competitive drive in a lot of guys, and he's got it. You know, hey, I remember betting on him, you know, when he was with Michigan. And part of the reason he fell to the sixth round was because Michigan was primarily a running team. You know, and that's the way Michigan plays. They are a, you know, cold weather, run first offense. Another perfect example, There's a rookie for the Eagles named Corey Clement. He caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl. Played for Wisconsin, and he's originally from Philly, and that's probably why he got, you know, a tryout with the Eagles, and he made it as a rookie undrafted. I actually rode the subway with his uncle last week, and he's a guy that, you know, he went to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's known for like those Ron Dane, 255-pound between the tackle running backs. And Clement is, you know, he can run off tackle, but he's a quicker guy. He can do the outside runs. So from Wisconsin, they didn't utilize him correctly because he didn't fit their mold and doesn't get drafted. But here's the thing. He's a hell of a ball player. Brady fell to the sixth round because he was in a system, you know, that did not, you know, really rely as much on the quarterback. And he, you know, you find a diamond in the rough sometimes, you know, but, you know, but you said that, you know, you think he'll be back, and I'm hard pressed to disagree with you on that one, because he's got that inner drive, that inner competitive spirit that, you know, he's like, you know, I ain't going out like that. You know, I'm coming back, and, you know, I'm not going to have the last play of my career being a Hail Mary that falls short. You know, I'm giving it one more go at it, and, you know, live or die.
I tell you, he's not going to be able to give any of his own receivers shit for not catching the ball next year, right?
Well, that was the thing. Like, they were doing all these, I put it on Facebook yesterday, all these NFL, like, Valentine's Day cards, and they were all spoofs, and all the teams kind of got, you know, blasted one way or another. And there was the one, there was a Tom Brady one, and it's like him dropping the ball. He goes, unlike this, you're a catch. there was another one. It was it was a picture of Tom Brady. He goes, I'll let you deflate my balls. Then they had the one with the Atlanta Falcons. He goes, you look like a 25-point lead because I want to blow you.
Oh, no. That's good.
The Eagles one was kind of complimentary towards them. Like, oh, look, I can finally give you a ring. the one for Dallas was, he goes, yeah, I didn't get you anything for Valentine's Day, but remember that great gift I got you 22 years ago?
Was that the last time you won the Super
Bowl? I got to think on there, man. You'll die at some of these.
Yeah, you gotta 40 some of those or something. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, till next year, we'll see. The big thing, the big prize for Brady, I think even more than the Super Bowl, though, is the undefeated season. I think he wants to try to get that again. I really think. He
right. I think that's, you know, a lot harder. I mean, they didn't last undefeated very long this year.
No.
They lost the actual first game of the season. Yeah. You know, the Thursday Super Bowl champ.
Yeah. I think Belichick wants that, too. I think it's a secret goal of his.
Hey, when you're that much of a competitor, that's what you want, you know? You know, if you don't want to be in that Marciano Mayweather category, you don't want to be in any.
Right. Well, I'll always say too that was the worst Super Bowl to lose, period. You know, if you're gonna lose any of them, that's got to be the worst to lose because it would have been the undefeated full season.
Yeah.
And they blew it. It wasn't so bad. Well, it didn't hurt as much to lose to you guys because, you know, you absolutely earned it. It was a shootout to the end, and you had to use every person on your bench to do it, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, that's like earlier in the year, even before Wentz got hurt, and there was, you know, a lot of the Dallas fans were bitching, like, well, we lost our all-pro left tackle. And Eagle fans were like, so did we. Well, we lost our star running back to suspension. And the Eagles were like, well, we lost our star running back. This is before they had got Ajayi. But like, yeah, but we lost our middle linebacker for 6 weeks. And we lost ours for the season. Mm-hmm. It was like everyone they had. Well, we lost like our kicker. So did we. Mm-hmm. And it was like every injury that they bitched about, we had the exact same one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like sometimes you got to be resilient, you know. Sometimes like in a fight, you know, your left eye is swollen shut. Well, you know what? You still got your right eye. Yeah. You know, your hands are hurting, but, you know, it's like you got the will. You got, like, that Arturo Gatti, you know. You know, that third, well, all three of the fights with Mickey Ward, you know, the first fight, he got up when it was, like, 9.5 count. You know, he was batted around the ring. He kept going, and he won the last round. In the third, or the second fight, Ward goes down face first into the buckle. He gets up staggering all over the ring. He survived because he fought back. Same thing in the third fight. Gotti breaks his hand, gets knocked down, and he fought back. You know, so sometimes that internal will, you know, it's like you know, you don't have that, like, you don't want to have that quit in you. I always said this against, like, certain teams. When you have certain teams with a lot of, like, flashy, you know, me-first type players, what you want to do is basically punch them in the mouth from the opening kickoff. Right. You know, and that's, like, you know, when you had, like, especially Dallas back in the day when they had, like, the Michael Irvin, especially, like, the Deion Sanders and all those guys that were more flash than anything, and they like, you know, showboat a lot, you crack them once or twice. Hey, same thing in a fight, right? You get a guy, you know, Prince Nazim Ahmed, he was goofing around, and Barrera cracked him from the start, put him in the shell.
Well, anyway, Tom's going to be the one talking about the Super Bowl next year because the Cleveland Browns are going all the way, so.
And my,
we're just going to be on the sidelines. Looking in. Did we lose Tom already? Maybe he left. Uh-oh. Tom, you still there?
Yeah.
Oh. No peanut.
I just tune football out. That way I have other things to do on the Super Bowl day, so I just get them all out.
We're going to start talking taxes or psychic activity for Tom to get interested.
There you go. Lots of other stuff to do, and of course I may be watching Cleveland next year, see if they can run the table again.
Yeah.
Boy, wouldn't that be something? At coaches, so that would be 1-15 and 0-16. So they broke the record in the NFL for they're 4-51 or something like that in the last. It's something going back to 1920, and if they can run the table again, I think that would set a record that would never be broken. Right. Because it doesn't take that long to rebuild the team. Look at the Eagles, right? Carson Wentz and everything else comes together.
Right.
So, that's going to be hard to do. If they can run the table again next year, and I'm hoping that they do, and another 0-16 season, I think that they'll be in the record books permanently. And that's the extent of my football knowledge.
Well, at least you still have Stipe.
There you go. We've still got the baddest man on the planet, and that's all. In my world, that's all that matters. I don't really too much controversy over baseball this year already. You guys heard what's going on here on that, and so it's just too much to get into. So I'll stick with what I know.
All right,
guys, let's enjoy the fight this weekend. Check back next week. All right.
Good.
Take it easy, guys. Adios.